Hello, I wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening, and also to explain why you might hear ads like this before, during, or even after an episode. We're a small but mighty team here at Realm, and to help fund our shows, we promote products or services that we think you'd enjoy from a variety of sponsors. If any of our ads interest you, one of the best ways to support us is by visiting the link or using the promo code in the ad. It's pretty much a win-win since you can get some great deals and we can keep making awesome shows like this one. You can also visit realm.fm/partners for more information about our sponsors and how to access the different promotions. Thanks again for joining us in our corner of the universe. Listen away.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Realm presents Book Burners, Season 5, Episode 6.
The dead Leviathan was drawing other watery scavengers to the area, and the lobster boat started off again, carrying its odd cargo with it. No one remained outside now. They couldn't stand the Grindylow's constant screeching. Rose, Sal, and Menchu were in the wheelhouse, while the first mate, the woman named Ruth, who had been sick over the side, took the helm.
"Let's just list them out," Rose said, holding her hand up and counting off her fingers. "What is wrong with that girl with the tentacles? What am I supposed to do with a catch of something that no one is going to want to eat? And who are you people?"
Sal and Menchu exchanged glances. "Well," Sal began. "Frances is an archivist on our team. She was caught in a magical attack a while back and lost her legs and gained what you saw." She cleared her throat. "As for the Grindylows, I'm going to recommend you drive the whole net into the sea. It will be far away before they can fight their way out, and the dead Leviathan is closer and easier food than we are. If the loss of the net bothers you, we can reimburse you if we manage to keep the world from ending."
"That's not funny," Rose said.
"It wasn't a joke," Sal countered. "And I'll let Father Menchu tell you who we are." Menchu gave an abbreviated account of Team 3 and what their goals were in Iceland. Sal watched the Grindylows continue to gnaw on the net outside. She wondered if they would taste like lobster.
"We usually run away from incidents like that. You run right into them."
It wasn't a question, just a flat comment as Rose crossed her arms.
"It's what we do. And it's needed now more than ever."
Rose assessed them briefly.
"You're really a priest?"
she asked Menchu. His eyes widened in brief surprise.
"Yes," he said. "You'll bless my ship before you get off it."
Sal bit back a sarcastic retort that Menchu's blessing would do little against what they were up against, but she wasn't going to slam the door on their obvious and easy out. He smiled gently in that priest way he had.
"Of course."
Rose glanced at Sal.
"Say to your people. I need to talk to the father here."
Sal nodded and sent a look of gratitude toward Menchu. She paused at the bottom of the wheelhouse ladder to look again at their prize, the huge collection of furious monsters. She hoped her plan with the net would work.
"Merging the connections," said a voice behind her, and she jumped.
"Holy shit, Perry," Sal said, staring at him. "Where the fuck did you come from?" He didn't answer. She grabbed his shirt and pulled him into the shadow of the wheelhouse at an angle where the crew wouldn't see him. Perry looked terrible, worse every time she saw him. His skin showed small cracks that glowed silver as he smiled weakly at her. "How did you get here? You can't have stowed away." She squinted at him as if she could see the angel lurking under his skin. "Is this an errand thing? Did you teleport?"
He smiled, focusing far beyond her into the darkness.
I never said that.
Said what? Why are you here? It's not safe for you to be heading to Iceland. That's why we left you where you were safe.
Oh, I have always loved you, Sal. He said, then smiled wider, a sad, knowing smile.
Unexpected tears came to her eyes.
I love you, too. Damn it, I wish I knew how to fix you.
Then he was gone, as if he'd never been there, popping away like a genie, using whatever bit of Aaron's power he still had access to.
Asante was dressing Liam's wound as Grace was settling Francis under several blankets when Sal and Menchu joined them. Asante and Liam sat on one of the tiny bunks, with Grace and Francis on the other one. Both women still had damp hair. The newcomers stood awkwardly, crowding the room. There was little space to move.
The captain isn't going to throw us off for hiding Francis and her other information from them. She's pissed, though, Sal said. She looked at Menchu. So what did she want from you?
Solace, he said. She's newly returned to the church and very frightened. Any reassurances from a priest or none, one who is not her sister, will help her.
He paused.
She wanted to give me her last confession, lest she die on this voyage or on the way home. I gave her the Maitress's cross.
They all waited for a respectful moment, letting that sink in.
Smart, Liam finally said.
Grace shrugged and put her hand out to Sal, who joined her on the bed.
Why'd you let it go so easily?
It felt right. I wanted to leave her with payment, something she would treasure.
Fair. How much longer do we have on this boat? Grace asked.
Oh, about another day, I'd say, Liam said, looking at his watch. Hard to be sure after that little adventure.
Is everybody all right?
Sal asked, looking specifically at Liam and Francis.
Liam shrugged.
That'll be fine. I don't know how she's still alive, though.
We are in an area with highly concentrated magic, Asante said.
She's more powerful, I suppose.
She wouldn't have been able to do that in a stable area.
But she wouldn't have needed to, Grace said, since Grindylows wouldn't be a menace in a stable, low-magic area.
Asante spread her hands in agreement and nodded.
Guys, Perry appeared to me, Sal said, squeezing Grace's hand.
She looked at Menchu.
After I left you two in the wheelhouse, just kind of appeared on the deck.
Can he do that?
Liam asked Asante.
What do you mean, can he do that?
Sal snapped, giving in to the childish lure of picking at Liam.
He did it. He showed up. Said some shit that made no sense.
She shook her head in frustration.
How did he look?
Liam asked.
How do you think? Sal asked bitterly. He was cracked and silvery, like Aaron was inside him about to burst out or something. He said something about merging the connections, and the rest was just gibberish.
He said he loved me, and then disappeared. Merging the connections,
Menchu repeated thoughtfully. His connections to this reality are disintegrating further,
Asante said.
Gee, you think?
Sal bit her lips closed. She took a deep breath through her nose and then relaxed.
I'm sorry. It shook me seeing him like that.
I understand, Asante said softly.
You four need some rest.
She stood and forced the little sliding door open and gestured to Menchu to follow her.
Sal suddenly felt very tired.
She slid back and leaned against the wall, trying to make the most of the small bunk real estate. Grace scooted close to her and wrapped her in her arms. Sal smiled, closed her eyes, and tried to block out the screams of the Grindylows. The coast of Iceland lay before them, looking bright green and like a brand new world. Menchu and Asante watched it approach. The world was blessedly silent, as the net full of Grindylows had been jettisoned many kilometers back.
I have an idea, Menchu said.
That's always good to hear, Asante said.
Something, Perry said. Merging connections. We don't have our usual ways of communicating with people, and we're cut off from the church. We need our own network, for which we don't need to rely on anyone else.
Like the magical community has, she said, smiling slightly. Yes, I suppose so. We need people with other connections, like Sister Mary Thomas and Rose.
What do you want to accomplish with this? Asante said. It's not as if you don't have friends.
I have no main goal, just that if I work on keeping the connections, I can know who to go to faster than usual.
She thought for a moment. I like it. We can make lists of people we trust and contact them as best we can. We'll see who Rose can connect us with to find us transport to the active volcano. Didn't she say she knew someone?
I'll check, he said and headed for the wheelhouse.
Rose looked as worn out as the rest of them, but while they all looked tired for having been at sea on a tiny boat for days, she simply looked more like a salty old ship's captain. Her cheeks were rosy and her blue eyes sharp as she headed for the port in Vik. She glanced at Manchu when he approached her.
Did you find more monsters?
He smiled.
The sea is quiet right now. But we will need transport to the volcano when we get ashore. Is your offer to find us help with that still open?
Rose grinned.
I figured you'd take one of those tourist buses. Are they still running, with everything going on?
You don't know Icelanders.
Well, then no, a tourist bus wasn't the plan. Our timeline might not work with the tour. Is there another option?
She nodded once.
I know a guy.
We can imagine many potential futures. Some serve as inspiration, others, warnings. Wondery offers one possibility of the future in their new show, The Last City. The year is 2072, and the city of Piura stands as a miraculous green haven. Piura is a geo-engineered paradise that protects fortunate residents from the global catastrophes of heat domes, fires, floods, and droughts. Demetria Lopez heads up Piura's public relations, tirelessly promoting the city's idyllic image. But when she stumbles upon a dark secret that, if exposed, would be the downfall of Piura's existence, she must decide who and what she's willing to protect. From Wondery, the makers of Academy and Dr. Death, The Last City stars actors Ray Seahorn, Jeannie Tirado, and Maury Sterling. Follow The Last City on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Last City early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Four. Rose left them in the hands of her friend Einar, a blonde, blue-eyed young man who could have been a model in America, but in Iceland, he seemed to have the unfortunate fate of just blending in with all the other beautiful people. Liam disliked him at once. Einar actually was a tour guide for one of the companies with the buses, but he also did private tours in his large red SUV that could easily fit them all. He didn't even blink at Frances, who wasn't bothering to hide her tentacles as she transferred from wheelchair to car. Rose had a point about Icelanders, Liam figured.
It's a pity it's so hard to get to Iceland right now, Einar said, driving out of the small village and heading into the mountains.
Smoke hung in the air, obscuring the peaks.
With all this volcanic activity, tourism should be going through the roof. There's nothing tourists like more than danger. My brother's in travel insurance. He knows all about that. We're going to the lava tubes outside the volcano Hekla. Now, did you know that in the Middle Ages, Europeans called Hekla the gateway to hell?
Einar babbled on, tour guide style, oblivious to his audience. Liam leaned over the middle seat of the SUV and poked Asante, who was sitting in front of him, in the shoulder.
Gateway to hell, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Gateway is promising. Hell, not so much, Asante said. But ignorance always assumes the worst thing, so if they saw a gateway connected to a volcano, then they would have assumed the worst.
We'll find out, I suppose. Aren't we supposed to be going to that volcano?
He paused, wondering if he should even attempt the name.
The famous one?
Eyjafjallajökull, Asante supplied.
Further research indicated that the dragon is magically connected to every volcano. We can summon her from any active area.
Liam sat back. He glanced at Frances, who was looking out the window. She'd been very quiet since her adventure in the water, and he hadn't wanted to press her.
You should probably stay with the SUV, he said. I doubt the lava tubes are wheelchair-friendly.
She smiled sadly and looked at him.
That's fine. I was hoping you wouldn't need me. I'm not really up for a lot of action right now. I discovered so much I could do in the water, swimming and breathing, even. But I forgot that I wasn't like Grace and could still be hurt. And when that thing dragged me into the dark.
She shuddered and he put his arm around her.
Grace and Manchu sat next to Asante with Sal in the front seat. Grace was holding the sturdy hurricane lamp in her lap, her candle, if you could still call it that, burning low.
She watched it in a kind of meditative trance. He wondered why she didn't put it out for the trip, but then looked at Frances and realized he knew exactly why. They rounded a hill, and Einar pointed to a valley, on the other side of which was a smoking mountain.
The gateway to hell, he said grandly. I'll be able to get you as close as the lava tubes, which are pretty easy to get into, but beyond that, you're on your own. I'll wait for you at the SUV until nightfall or eruption.
He winked into the rearview mirror, and Liam figured he was flirting with Grace.
Yeah, poor idiot, he thought.
Hekla was pouring smoke into the air, but they didn't see any lava coming from it.
Lava tubes don't have actual lava in them, do they?
Liam asked.
Einar chuckled in that tour guide kind of way.
No, they are tubes formed from lava that flowed thousands of years ago. They are perfectly safe. If the volcano erupts, it's likely it will do so from the top.
Likely, Liam repeated.
Sure, I mean the lava comes from deep in the earth, so of course there's lava there, but it won't be seeking exit into other underground areas. Probably.
He winked again. He actually winked while talking about visiting an active volcano.
I hate this guy,
Liam said to Frances as Einar went on.
Still treating us like tourists.
That's what you're worried about? She asked, not the active volcano.
Liam shrugged.
Well, this problem is punchable. That, he pointed to the volcano, is a bit on the vague side.
And you can't punch him right now because he's driving us around, she reminded him patiently.
Fine, he said, sighing and settling back.
The SUV took them onto a dirt road that led to a large field at the foot of the mountain. Immediately, they saw another SUV parked in the middle of the field.
That's odd.
We're not the first ones here. I thought the tours had stopped because of all the volcanic activity,
Einar said, possibly the first off-script thing to come out of his mouth.
I don't think that's a tour, Sal said, sounding tense.
They stopped next to the other SUV, which looked abandoned. The air was hot and thick with sulfur fumes, even as snow covered the ground farther from the mountain.
Here's the opening for the lava tube, Einar said.
He handed them all hard hats with lamps built in.
Wear these at all times. I'm serious. You will hit your head, and you will be glad you have it.
I'll be waiting out here with your friend.
Don't let him talk your ear off, Liam said, and Francis grabbed his shirt collar and pulled him close. She kissed him fiercely, driving all other thoughts from his mind.
Come back, she commanded, and he nodded.
The team checked their gear. They'd had to leave a good amount behind. The armor wouldn't allow for much movement underground, but they each had warding bracelets, and Sal wore her climbing gloves. They ventured into the tube, Liam relieved to be free of the chattering tour guide. Sal and Menchu were talking in low voices in the front, Grace's candle in Arturo's careful hands. Its low flame threw dancing shadows against the warm, wet walls. Grace walked a pace behind them, listening intently.
What's going on? Liam whispered to Grace.
They think Wong beat us here, she said grimly.
Oh, shit again, he said. How? Did she have a better lobster boat?
Asante brought up the rear, her hands holding her silver book as reverently as Arturo held Grace's candle. She wore a pack on her back with all her magical tools, knives and candles and anything else she might need. She picked her way carefully around the rocks as they descended into the darkness. Wong wasn't hard to track. She and her team had set up scores of candles, drawn chalk lines on the rocks, and were consulting books. Wong stood in the center of the candles, knife in hand. Wong, Grace said, stepping forward. How does it feel to go into hell with whose blood on your hands?
Grace, you're late, Wong said. And I'm not going into hell, I'm going into Eden, according to her.
She pointed the knife at Asante, who was pulling candles out of her own pack.
How much time do you need?
Grace asked quietly.
At least 5 minutes, Asante said. I'll go as fast as I can. If she's already summoned the dragon, things could go faster or fail entirely.
I'll buy you time, Grace said.
She focused on Wong again. I never thought she would stoop to murder.
You respected who, and he loved you. The world is ending, you idiot. I'll murder anyone to stop that from happening.
Oh, Machiavellian of you, Sal muttered. Keep her talking. She can't summon the dragon if she's focused on you or fighting,
Menchu said.
She can't, but she can, Sal said, pointing at the lackey beyond Wong.
He was young, with wide, terrified eyes, and he had taken the knife from her and was slicing his forearm with shaking hands.
Blood hit the ground with a splash that really shouldn't have echoed as loudly as it did among the other noises.
But the drops shimmered in the candlelight, and the young man began speaking loudly in Chinese, droning in the ritualistic way Liam was becoming all too familiar with. The few drops widened into a pool that began to glow under the man's feet. He glanced at Wong, looking like he was about to cut and run at any moment, but she fixed him with a glare. She would kill him without a thought, and he knew it, Liam saw.
Enough, Grace said. If that kid opens the gate and goes through, we're done.
She launched herself at Wong. Wong smiled as if she had been waiting for just this moment. She welcomed it. Murdering her boss had broken some kind of internal seal on all her psychotic tendencies, and now she could do anything she liked to anyone. If she saved the world, it would be worth it. If she didn't, then they'd all be dead and it wouldn't matter. Liam wondered what it was like to feel such evil freedom. He hoped he would never find out. He crouched by Asante and helped her set candles in a rough circle. When Grace hit Wong, it rang through the lava tubes like a gong. Then Liam realized it wasn't the two of them fighting that made the noise. Something was coming through the pool of blood at the young man's feet. He looked down and then back up, mouth open to scream, but the long, sinewy body that sprang from the pool snapped him between its jaws before he could make a sound. The other lackeys Wong had brought shouted in alarm and scattered, some running farther down the tube and others heading for Sal and the others panic scrawled on their faces. Liam stared at the beast, which had looked about the size of a killer whale, but it was growing rapidly, its shimmering form solidifying as it moved from whatever metaphysical plane it had been on to their present reality. The thing glistened in the candlelight, a huge snake, nearly filling the lava tube. Its scales were the same glistening black as the cave walls, and a draconian head bent around to look at them. It roared again, and Liam could feel the walls, the volcano itself, rumble in response. Sal ran back to where Menchu and Asante were reading the book frantically while Grace grappled with Wong.
I think the snake disrupted the ritual, she said, gasping.
She grabbed Grace's candle from Manchu so he could better aid Asante.
Asante looked up, blinding Sal with the headlamp.
Sal, that's not a snake. It's a dragon. Their ritual worked. That is the dragon in her Hecla aspect. And she is the door to Eden.
Oh, shit, Liam said. Grace, get away from there!
Wong reacted first, throwing Grace off her as if she were a doll. She bent and dipped her fingers in the blood that splattered the floor and wall from the young man's death. She wiped lines down her face like tear streaks, and Liam saw her glow in a most worrying way, as if her bones had been illuminated from within. She looked like a bright skeleton that had decided to wear a human disguise for the day.
That can't be good, he said to Asante, who was still single-mindedly dealing with her own chalk drawings.
She glanced up and then back down.
She has the amulet of infrangible bone that we had locked up in the archives. It's activated by blood, and it makes a person's bones impossible to break.
Why didn't you give that to Grace? Liam demanded.
You think she would have accepted it? Asante asked. Now be quiet.
Manchu appeared at his side.
Grace needs you. I'll help out here.
Grace lay crumpled in a divot in the cave wall, or maybe she had made the divot? Liam wasn't sure. He dashed over, slipping on the rocks a little, and helped her up.
What did she hit me with?
Grace asked, shaking her head to clear it.
Asante said she has the amulet of the indefatigable thing that makes her bones unbreakable, Liam said.
All right, I'll go for something else, Grace said. I'm glad I read that anatomy book.
What does that mean?
Liam asked, but she was gone.
She can't burn much more, Sal said, running up to him. She's got almost nothing left.
The two combatants seemed to have forgotten the dragon that growled low in her throat. Asante chanted desperately where Liam had left her, with Manchu watching over her. Grace had changed her attacks subtly, focusing on strikes of the soft parts of Wong's body, hitting her in the throat, the stomach, and the kidneys. Wong collapsed and rolled, grabbing at a duffel and pulling something out. She came up wearing a pair of silver gauntlets. They glowed, and Wong now looked like a Christmas tree angel, if the angel were covered in blood and her eyes were mad with power.
What do those do?
Liam yelled at Manchu.
I expect they do what you'd think magical gauntlets would do, he replied. I hope Grace doesn't get hit with those.
Sal was rummaging in Asante's pack. She retrieved something and ran to Grace, pressing a knife into her hand.
Don't burn. You're too low, she said.
You'd rather her take over Eden? Grace snapped.
I'd rather you let us help, Sal said.
Then help. Stop them from opening the gate.
Grace ran at Wong again. Sal looked at Liam desperately.
Will Asante be ready soon?
I don't know, he said.
Damn it, Sal said.
The ground rumbled under their feet and Sal stumbled backward. Liam caught her and helped her protect the candle as she stood again.
Asante's head snapped up. Done, she said. The dragon had lost patience with the warring humans and had taken in a deep breath. Was it going to roast them all in flames? But Liam realized Asante's spell had taken hold, and when the dragon opened its huge mouth, a shimmering portal appeared between its jaws.
We're supposed to go through that, he shouted.
Ideally, but I think the most important thing now is to stop Wong from doing it, Asante said, falling to her knees, panting with exhaustion.
On it, he said.
Grace could feel her candle flaring as the flame fought the injuries Wong inflicted. One of the gauntlets had connected with her once, a glancing blow on the shoulder, and had thrown her straight across the cave. She had hoped they could do this the polite way and just beat the hell out of each other, but Wong had to bring magic trinkets into it. Trinkets and pain. For a moment, she thought about the many things she and Sal could do with the time being burned away. But it was only a moment. She would waste no more of her candle on this woman than she had to. Liam was there, guarding her with his sword while she recovered. When she leapt to her feet, he pressed the silver knife into her hands again.
You drop this. Keep the dragon from eating her. I've got your back.
Grace advanced toward Wong, snarling. She was vaguely aware of the huge serpentine dragon filling the cave a ways down, but she had to focus on Wong. She was so damn tired of people wanting to kill her. Wong was staring at the dragon's open mouth, distracted and delighted.
It worked, she said.
Grace wasn't close enough. Wong would make it through before she could get to her. She could feel her candle flare and gutter as it sought more wick for fuel, wick that was no longer there after 90-plus years. She burned bright to summon speed. Wong was ahead of her, running toward the dragon's mouth.
She jumped, and Grace jumped after her, catching her by the wrist and yanking back. Before Wong could make it through or respond to Grace's attack, Grace sliced with the knife, trying to remember where the bones connected. Wong's bones were unbreakable, but no one had said anything about her skin, muscle, or tendons. The gauntlet protected her wrist, but her fingers were splayed as she resisted Grace's pull, and Grace neatly severed her last two fingers on her right hand. Blood splashed from her hand as she screamed, and the fingers flew into the dragon's mouth through the portal. The dragon roared again, thrashing. Its mouth slammed closed. "No!" Asante shouted. Wong collapsed, cradling her bleeding hand. "We need to get out of here," Grace called out. She felt decidedly odd, like she was struggling with healing a concussion. Before she could figure out what was going on, the dragon struck her, possibly trying to eat her, possibly trying to knock her out of the way and eat Wong. Didn't matter. She flew down the tunnel, heading toward a rocky outcroppings of ancient cooled lava. "Oh, this one's gonna hurt," she thought, and prepared to burn her candle even brighter, but as she reached, she sensed that the candle wasn't there to burn. Dimly, she wondered which would kill her, the impact on the rocks or her candle finally burning away. The world snuffed out. The snake struck Grace, but Liam wasn't worried. Grace never got seriously injured. Liam went in to back her up because he'd never let her down, but then Sal screamed. Sal never screamed. Liam was running for the snake thing when he heard Sal yell for Menchu, panic and pain in her voice. Then Sal was grabbing Grace's candle from Menchu, reaching into the hurricane lamp and pinching out the flame. Grace's lifeless body bounced off the rocks behind them. A blue shockwave surrounded her, then subsided. "Grace is gonna be pissed about that," he thought. But then there was the dragon to think about. He turned back to the dragon, and the thing roared again, shaking the tunnels. Hands closed on his shoulders, and he flinched. "This way is closed to us now," Asante said into his ear, her voice oddly calm amid the chaos. "Hecla is too angry to open the gate again. We need to get Grace and go."
"Grace, just light her candle again."
"There's nothing left of the candle, Liam. And her ward is spent. There's no time to debate. Let's go." The gravity of the situation hit Liam then, and he turned and ran. Asante's bobbing headlamp led the way, and he stopped by Sal and Menchu to help lift Grace and carry her out of the lava tubes, the dragon howling behind them. Einar was waiting for them. Or rather, Francis was waiting for them, with Einar down on the ground, tentacles wrapped around his neck and each wrist, shouting at him that he would wait for the team until hell itself opened for them. She looked up when they came running, the ground shaking behind them. She jumped off Einar and ordered him into the driver's seat. He obeyed, swearing something in Icelandic that Sal didn't want translated. She scrambled into the very back seat, leaving the other doors open for the team. Lava spewed out from the volcano, filling the air with red flame and gas that left them all coughing. Lava was only fast when you couldn't get a house out of the way. In reality, it was sluggish and inevitable, but easily outrun. Einar gunned the engine, and they fled the field as the dragon bellowed its rage into the sky. "What happened?" Francis asked, leaning over the middle seat, helping prop up Grace.
"We lost," Liam said, leaning back and sighing. "Well, Grace won. The rest of us lost. Now she's out."
Sal was dabbing at the blood on Grace's face and the back of her neck, murmuring to her. "She's not healing," Francis said. "Isn't she supposed to heal?" No one said anything. "Are you going to relight her candle?" Menchu looked at the candle in the lamp, a smudge of wax and a blackened wick.
"I don't know if we can, but we will try."
There was an awkward pause. Then Francis asked, "What happened with Wong? I saw some others run out after the eruption start, but I didn't see her."
"We left her down there with the dragon," Menchu said. "We don't know what her status is."
"So now what?" Francis asked, putting her hand in Liam's. Asante sighed. "We need to regroup. Einar, if I give you an address, can you take me there? I promise it's not near a volcano, active or otherwise.
Taking you as far as the town border, then we're done, Einar blurted. Find your own way. Walk, fly, I don't care.
Manchu had a blood-stained piece of paper in one hand and a dull pencil in the other.
What are you doing?
Liam asked.
Making a list of names, Manchu said. I'll be getting some names from you. People you trust, people you can count on right now. We need all the help we can get.
You also need a clean piece of paper, Liam said. No one laughed.
I'll see who I can think of, he mumbled.
On the outskirts of Ik, they stood watching the taillights of Einar's SUV. Sal settled Grace in Liam's arms and took his pack in her own.
Now what? Liam asked.
We hitchhike, Sal said, but they noticed the road was obviously traffic-free. Or walk. Liam made a face and shifted Grace's body.
How far?
Asante frowned at the map, which shifted before their eyes.
We are pretty close, a few kilometers. I think the maitress's house wants to be found.
Asante took the lead, and Sal kept close to Liam, dabbing at Grace's wounds and feeling a horrific disconnect in realizing she'd never seen Grace sleep injured before.
I'm sorry, Sal whispered. I'm so sorry.
You are listening to Book Burners, created and produced by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side passage?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course.
What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Book Burners is created by Max Gladstone and written by Max Gladstone, Margaret Dunlap, Murr Lafferty, Andrea Phillips, and Brian Francis Slattery. Executive produced by Molly Barton and Julian Yap. Performed by Exie Sands. Audio production by Amanda Rose Smith, with additional editing by Corey Barton. Original theme by Hashem Asadolahi, featuring Jody Redditch Ferber and mixed by Justin Morrell. Cover art by Annie Wu. Executive in charge for Realm, Mary Asadolahi. Find more shows like Book Burners by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.